Hey everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of All Elite Geekly, the show where we chat about all things geek, and eventually we chat about some AEW Dynamite. We're your hosts, I'm Boris, and this week I am joined by a returning Dax Xavier Zaya. Dax, welcome back.
What's good, wrestling fans? It's great to be back, Boris. It's great to be back with you, and shout out to Smack Daddy Brad for, you know, tagging in for me last week. Really appreciated that.
Tons of fun having him on the show. He's in another honorary geek in this on this network, and it's always fun catching up with him because he's one of the last people that I know that has an active pull list.
Right. Greatly appreciate it. Enjoyed it actually too. So, shout out to him. Appreciate it. Keeping you company.
All right, Dax. So, gotta ask. Want to talk wrestling first, or you want to geek out first?
No, we geeking out this week. It wasn't as bad as last week. So, not to say it was great, but it wasn't as bad as last week. So.
Exactly. There's a few things that I'm going to give them, the flowers on, but there's also a few things that make me laugh about wrestling fans in general. And you know what? Maybe I fall into this trap sometimes as well with AEW. But anyways, we'll talk about AEW in a little bit. Let us talk right now about some comics. But before we do with comics and geekery, before we do any of that, last week, the reason why you were away, and I mentioned off the top of the show, last week was because you were at Fan Expo Philadelphia. We kind of talked a little bit about it, but I wanted to wait for right now to really get your full opinion. I did read your article, excellent article. I shared it on all of the socials because it was really well done. And I think that it hit a lot of great points about Fan Expo. And I'm talking about the company and just conventions in general now. And Dax, talk to me about your experience and let's have this convo.
Well, thank you for that. And thank you to everybody who got a chance to read it. I got actually really good feedback from it. It felt like doing a term paper again, first of all, but you know, I do this every year. I go between them or New York Comic Con. I go there and I compare and contrast between the two in terms of how, not only just what happens at the event, but how the companies do things, how in terms of customer service, in terms of, you know, spectacle and whatnot like that. So the last 2 years of their resurgence, remember people, Fan Expo, for those who don't know, Fan Expo was once known as Wizard World and they kind of fell off a bit right around 2016. And we haven't heard, they just started teetering off and we haven't heard from them. We just thought they were dead in the water. And then all of a sudden they resurged as and rebranded as Fan Expo. And, you know, this year I felt like it was a change in the wind, as I put it in my article. It felt different, not only just because it was weather. Like last year, like I said, it was in June. It was a great time in June. The weather was better. We had a lot of celebrations going on around Philadelphia during the time. And everything was dope for some reason. Now it was in May. They wanted to do May the 4th. That was the theme. And they had a bunch of Star Wars, people, Hayden Christensen, Rosario Dawson, Cameron Monaghan, and a whole bunch of other people there to celebrate May the 4th. I mean, I'm sure there are fans who enjoyed it. Casual fans and whatnot enjoyed it. If you're like a normal con goer, you might have found some issues with this one, in my opinion. And it was just, you know, there were some audio and technical issues. Here's the thing. We're talking about wrestling here, and we're talking about audio and then technical issues. This is the right place to talk about it because we constantly refer to AEW in terms of that. And this felt like a very kind of AEW-ish type of handling of this convention, if I want to compare and contrast it to that. But there was a little bit of that. There was a little bit of hiccups there. And fan reaction anticipation in some of the panels was okay, was lukewarm at best. But then there was the treatment of the press situation that really, really, really taken me aback. I don't know what was going on. And hence, on their social media, they got a good turnout, but it's not, I don't think it's to what they were looking for. And then also, they had like over 10 cancellations of, you know, talent. And rescheduling happened. And that, you know, from both perspectives, the fan, you know, the attendees perspective, and from people working behind the scenes, I can see both sides of frustration. You know, that's not the fault of what happens, you know, to, you know, you try your best to book as many people as possible to make sure that they make the date. You also pay money to go see these people. When they cancel out and it's the only day that you got to go, it's frustrating. I get that. I also get, like, you know, from Fan Expo side, like, every once in a while, you know, these things happen and it's, they try their best to make it work and troubleshoot it. At the same time, I do have this belief that it is not all what they say it is in terms of, like, them having to cancel out. Sometimes I think it's just lack of fan participation or fan, you know, when I say fan anticipation, I mean, like, you know, they don't gain enough proceeds or funds or whatever like that to get autographs and all the stuff. When they're not pre-ordered, when there's no pre-orders of, you know, autographs and photo ops and all the stuff, it's like, why even come? Because you're not going to make any money there. So it's not even worse. So we'll just write you off as, like, you had commitments or obligations or whatever like that. I'm pretty sure that has happened before.
Yeah, if they don't get enough of those, like, early bird passes bought for their Q&A and sign and, like, signature sessions and stuff like that, right? It could also be the talent that signed off, but it's always interesting, though. Like, and I understand it from a scheduling point of view. You know, it's hard to, because they're scheduled so far in advance, right? But at the same time, my one gripe about that is that you've made a commitment to this convention. You know, it's
I will say this. It doesn't, it rarely, and I mean rarely, happens at New York Comic Con or San Diego Comic Con.
Exactly.
It rarely that is like the Met Gala.
But that's the thing. Conventions. It's priorities, right? It comes down to priorities.
Right. And I mean, if you're Rosario Dawson and Hayden Christensen, you're going to make money. People are going to want to see you. That's not going to be an issue. Like, I mean, I remember 2019, and I mentioned this before, Sylvester Stallone was coming to, you know, Repop brought Sylvester Stallone as, like, the marquee person, which was dope. Okay, like, we want to see our Philly dude, you know, Rocky, come to town. Up until we got the prices of autographs and photos, which were astronomical just to sign an autograph, you know, glove or whatever like that. And then all of a sudden people were, you know, back, there was a lot of backlash about that. And then all of a sudden he had commitments. And then in his place was none other than the Ultimate Spider-Man himself, Tom Holland, which, I mean, this was the time when Marvel was at its hottest. And this was also the time when Tom Holland was said, they announced that Tom Holland would not be a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe for a long time. He's on borrowed time. And him being there, it was a major deal. And not only that, his autographs and photo ops were not nearly as much as what Sylvester Stallone was. And he got paid because there were thousands of people that came to see him. So, yeah. I mean, there's a different situation. These things happen that way. Right. I mean, some people do have film obligations and contractual agreements that, you know, just come up. It happens. I don't think it happens for everybody.
Yeah. Now, one of the things you were talking about was kind of the way the media and the media treatment. Do you want to elaborate a little bit on that?
Oh, God. Yes. I was absolutely disappointed. It was like, this is the first convention I've ever gone to where staff, and not all staff, there's staff that I know from prior years that were always cool, and they know me, they recognize me, and they were, you know, we have good rapport and etiquette towards each other, as they should, and as I should as well. They changed up on how they proceed. Like, I couldn't get any video done because they changed a lot what was going on. They switched out humans for these $2,000 4K cameras that they're now filming in each of these halls. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. Last year, they were very welcoming, approaching, hospitable. That Peter Cullen Q&A that I did would not have happened if not for one of the staff giving me a tripod to do it, to record it. So last year, they allowed it. This year, it was like only still photos and all the stuff. And I'm like, okay, I wish they would have told us beforehand on via emails and stuff like that. Like, the way they handled it was just bad. This could have been said even at the press party. Nothing's ever said. So that was the situation. And then how aggressive they were towards us, it was, I, I've, it made me feel unwelcome. It made me feel, you know, it was unwarranted. It was unwelcoming. To me, it was slightly embarrassing the way that they handled it. Mm-hmm. And it really put a bad taste in my mouth, because I've been going to cons and covering, you know, these events for years. It's, you know, when you're a promotion and you're working, whether you're Disney, whether you're Repop, whether you're San Diego Comic-Con International, whether you're AEW, WWE, you put on a smile for everybody because you want good PR, especially from the people who are reporting how great this thing is. And it's one thing if they did something totally wrong, whatever like that, but a lot of us did nothing wrong in a sense. And the way that we were treated and everything was just, it was uncalled for. Especially because I work with Repop since 2018. Whether I was, you know, liaisoning for them, for people I know to come to the convention, to doing live panels, you know, in their events, to even work doing panels on behalf of them, you know, and then also covering, you know, media for New York Comic Con for the last 3 years. I've had nothing but the best, you know, relationship with them, working relationship, partnering, media, PR, everything. I see how I always look at how they handle, from a customer service standpoint, I always look at how they handle everything, media, how they handle, you know, attendees and everything. And it is with the utmost top quality. It was a total contrast from what I felt with Fan Expo this year. So I hope that they do learn from this, because I know the PR manager did read the article. I hope he learned from it. The way I see it is like, you know, I'm a guy who studied art and design and had teachers who would not hold back on their critiques. And they will tell you if your shit is trash. They will tell you how to perfect it and how to make it better, but they will tell you if your shit is trash. And I've learned from that, in a sense of like, I need to give them a reason never to, you know, call my shit trash. And, you know, I got mad A's for it, for my work because of it. But at the same time, it's like, you got to take constructive criticism. Mm-hmm. You got to be able to be disciplined enough to take a criticism. If he reads it and he sees that as not to be insulted by it, but also to, because I mean, I didn't bash him. I did give some good points about, you know, I you know, gave the good and the bad. But if he sees that and only sees the bad and just gets upset about it, then he's not doing the job. He's not understanding his assignment.
Yeah. So something that I've realized over like, since 2007, 2008, that I've been working with large companies and doing events and things like that. Like, mm-hmm. This is outside of my day job. This is other stuff. Right. And that sometimes, you know, the left hand doesn't talk to the right hand, and there's a communication issue. So it could be something as simple as the employees weren't instructed properly from the company itself. And if that's the point, then that's, mm-hmm. they got to hear it, right? They got to understand.
I detected that instantly. That's exactly. And I remember this from, you know, my experience. I for those who don't know, like, I've worked virtually in a lot of places. Mm-hmm. I worked retail for 7 years, you know, and then I moved on to corporate for over a decade. So I got, there was two different kind of customer service experiences, but all of them, you know, has to do with how you talk to the customer, the clients, whatever like that, and how you treat that and how you communicate. You know, part of being an organization is to be organized. And yes, communication is key to that. So if I get it, you got like a few hundred, you know, staff members. And then also on top of that, you got volunteers. You got to find it. And I worked fundraisers before, you know, I worked fundraisers acute to like, you know, over $1 million in proceeds and everything like that. And you got to be organized. You got to be on point with that. It's not going to be perfect, but to the point that you have to learn how to make sure that everybody's communicating, in some form or fashion. It just has to be. And they didn't do a terrible job, but there were some flaws that kind of, for me, felt like that they felt back. They went, you know, last 2 years was like three steps forward, and this one was like two steps back.
Yeah. The other issue that I'm finding is that, you know, with social media and everything, a lot of these companies are a little more protective about what they want media to capture and put out there. which is kind of against the entire idea of these things. But
exactly,
but this is what's happening.
That to me was the strange part, which is why I was like, why can't we just do video? And like, I'll compare and contrast. I go to New York Comic Con every single day for the last 3 years consistently. And what I'm able to do in there, and you could go to my website and talktomlive.com and a blog page where I cover both Fan Expo and New York Comic Con and see how much, look at the footage that I have in New York Comic Con. See exactly, I am up close on those panels. I am casing the entire Empire stage, which is like thousands of people. And I'm able to do that. IGN is over there. Empire Mag is over there. They're like, and they want you to capture that experience. They want you to, because they want that exposure. I'm like, if you're a Fan Expo and you're supposed to be promotion, and like, if something dope is supposed to happen, you want people to capture that. Why are you keeping that to yourself? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't. I even think about from an independent wrestling standpoint, like, you want things to go viral so people can see what's going on and what's the deal. And, you know, they wanted that footage to themselves. And it's like, that's dumb.
Funny that you even bring up independent wrestling companies, from independent wrestling companies to the some of the bigger mainstream ones, right? Like, you're seeing a lot of people want to own exclusive content for themselves, but they don't realize that it is the media. It is us. Us as fans, attendees who make that shit viral. It's not the big companies.
Right. I mean, I'll give you two examples. Like, WWE World last month did the same thing. For some reason, they only let media come in with cameras. I get that. And that's fine. They don't, for some reason, they want everybody to come with cameras to their convention. I get that. I understand it. But then I go to Wale Mania, where I'm not going in as media. I'm going in as a fan. They specifically constantly sit on stage. We want you to put your cameras up. We want you to take footage of everything going on. And that we did. And lo and behold, for some reason, of all the people that, you know, who got footage done, mine's got seen more than anybody. It got over like majorly, to the point that WWE even took a clip of my video and put it on an episode of NXT. So you want that. you want that type of situation. By the way, thank you, WWE, for acknowledging me for that moment. Which is very odd, considering the history of me.
Did they reach out to you to use the footage, or did they just credit you?
No, they took a few seconds of the clip.
Yeah.
And I think they did that for everybody. He just took a few seconds of the clip, and it just, boom, all of a sudden, I just watched you one episode of NXT that I even watched, and I was like, okay.
I know, right?
That happened.
Yeah, I know. It's because I've had people request clips from the Sunday show. Based on what we're talking about, the last time was specifically when I asked Brad, you know, as a father, how does he feel about having his kids watching WWE with Vince McMahon, blah, blah, blah. So that clip, I was asked, like, I got a couple media requests for that clip, and I'm like, sure, of course, use it, please.
What they did was credit, at least they credited me for it.
Yeah,
and that's what because here's the deal, that same video, not only got seen by a lot of people, it got viewed by a lot of people. I found out that people were actually taking footage from that and using it for his own, but wasn't credited to me. And I had to reach out to those people. I'm like, look, I don't mind you using it, but like, at least credit the source.
Mm-hmm.
And WWE did that without even me knowing that they did that for the Trick and Mello deal. So I was like, all right, at least it wasn't like a full clip, and it was like literally a few seconds of a clip, and they just, boom, right there. So I mean, but the point is they want people, while they wanted people to, you know, put them over.
Yeah. Now, my next question to you, and I know we're spending a lot of time on this, but I think this is an important discussion to have, especially in the age of social media and, you know, and going viral and, you know, guerrilla marketing, because that is essentially what this is. It is guerrilla marketing, right? Yeah. Do you foresee there being change for the good or for the bad, where the good is they're going to be a little more lenient, and or the bad is where they're going to be a little more restrictive?
And are you talking in terms of Fan Expo?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know, because I won't know until next year. And yeah. That's the bad part. It was such a bad taste in my mouth.
But here's the thing. Are you willing to go next year to see if it improves or not? Right? That's the thing.
I know. It irks. It irks because it's just this one time. I would need to see it in order to see if they improve. I mean, I do know people who also go every year, so I could reach out to them too at the same time. But it's like, I don't know. This was just, I don't know what they were doing this year. I just don't know. But, you know, as any promotion, they're going to claim that they did really well. Mm-hmm. Despite what you see on social media, you know. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. That's all I can actually say. I mean, let a year go by from this point and see where I'm at with this.
Okay. Cool. No, yeah, it's a very interesting conversation to have because I'm seeing this happen more and more and more where, you know, and it's also some people, like you said, right? Some people borrowed your footage from the Wale Mania stuff and used it mm-hmm. for their own stuff. And you don't know how your own footage is being used. So I understand, you know, companies wanting to be a little more protective of their footage in regards of how it's being used. But mm-hmm. at the same time, they need to recognize the flip side that it's because of you. And me
right.
and other media members that shit even goes viral or is known of or is
seen. It's just that plus the matter of the way you're being treated.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know what? It's so obvious, but it needs to be said because it is so obvious.
It sadly it just comes needs to down be said. To it.
Yeah,
you think it's supposed to be a part of it's a given, you know. You don't want a person from the media, like let alone little old me, but let it be like the Philadelphia Inquirer. Let it be, you know, one of the other, you know, bigger platforms out there, and you treating them people like that. You know, let it be NBC or whatever. Like yes, done. Like that's a means for dismissal.
Yeah, and the thing is, right? There is no levels of media. A media pass is a media pass, and technically, you don't
see that's the way it's supposed where
people
to be.
Are coming from until it's way too late.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. All right. So, season 1, episode 9, Tolerance is Extinction, part 2.
Okay. I want to give a spoiler warning to people right now. If you haven't seen it, you best believe you better fast forward right now because holy crap. First of all, I didn't get to talk about last week.
Yeah, talk about part 1 and then part 2. Talk about episode 8
and 9. When the 616 came and represented, man. Like, oh, man. Last week was I was sitting watching it and I was screaming and hollering at the sight of so many Marvel characters shown last week. I mean, you had Baron Zemo, you had Dr. Freaking Doom. Like when you saw Doom there, that was alone. They could have just showed Doom alone. That's a huge deal. Insanely
Captain
huge deal.
America, Zemo,
Captain America, Doom. I mean, oh, then but then later on, it was like the one everybody was waiting for. And that was the one when I screamed. When Magneto did his thing, and first of all, the whole Magneto was right. This show. It rewards comic book fans.
Yes.
It absolutely 100% caters and rewards comic book readers of the past. The Magneto was right thing. That was a big love letter. Wink, wink to us. I was like, oh, this is so awesome. And then when he did the beacon of energy that just went out and took all out the human sentinels, and all of a sudden you saw the Silver Samurai, and I was like, okay, that's dope. And then all of a sudden in New York, we see none other than the web slinger himself, and I just went, I'm done. Let's go. Mind you, also, I think something from comic book readers, if you're really thoroughly like this, that particular suit kind of paid homage to a little bit of the Eric Larson and Mark Bagley mm-hmm. style of suit. If you look at the way, you can always tell by the way the Spider-Man symbol is created, and Eric Larson, because I used to love drawing Eric Larson style, you know, illustrations from time to time. I love his work and I used to try to emulate his work, but the way he draws his spider emblem on Spider-Man is exactly the way they drew it on there. So I felt like that was a little bit of Easter egg too with that. But man, I love that episode and I'm like, how are they going to top this week? Mm. You talk about catering to fanfare overload. Now, they went back to wearing their old ass costumes, the classics. I'm like, are you kidding me? They went as gold and blue team. And you got Bastion in one case and you got Magneto in the other. This felt like when you read the comics back in the day, like the first, you know, Jim Lee comics, and then the other, I forgot who was the other one, Thibert or whatever. Yeah. The gold team version. And they separated. And now you're looking at two issues and you're reading two issues at the same time. And I love the way they did this. And, you know, with Xavier back in a helm and everything, it was like they went back to formula. You know, humans hating mutants, Magneto's now the enemy again. How they did this was genius. It was so genius. And then we found the end. Wolverine, Logan finally got what he wanted forever. Well, be careful what you wish for, my friend.
That's exactly it. Do you think this will directly lead to season two of him being a horseman of the apocalypse?
Ooh, that was what I never thought about that. That could be one thing. I just like the fact that Bone Claw's coming. The minute I saw them, I'm like, holy crap, Bone Claw Wolverine is coming. It is. Yep. This is going to be crazy. They just went to a place that I never thought they would go to with the show. I would like to speak on behalf of you and a lot of other people. This series alone, season one, and IMDb does have it as a season two coming. So,
well, they worked on one and two at the same time.
Oh, that's awesome. This series supersedes every live action adaptation ever made. Of X-Men, at least. I'm not going to put Deadpool in there because I feel like Deadpool sometimes is better.
That's on its own level of stuff. That's
on its own thing. But this the storytelling, they did everything right. And by the way, Cyclops and Cable, that one scene, I love that. Where he was like, he gave Cable his suit. He was like, I forgot what Cable said, but his reaction to it was a dig on the first movie. If you remember, where he was like, what do you want me to wear? Blue and yellow tights. And now he just reversed it back. I thought that was awesome. But man, I can't fathom what the hell's going to happen in the final season finale. They have outdone themselves insanely.
Remember, this is the last episode that I've seen about three weeks ago.
So now we gotta go in together now.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going, this is the blonde leading the blind. So on Wednesday, yes. I have no idea what is happening yet.
And I love that because now we're all going to be, you know what? I haven't felt this excited since going to see Endgame.
Yeah.
This show gives me the same feeling I had when going to see the Infinity Sagas of movies. I miss that feeling. I just wish I was in an audience when we were watching this. Like, if they tomorrow just decided, like, you know, we're going to put the last episode in theaters, I'm there.
Oh, in a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat. Like,
the last time the MCU tried to put something from TV into Inhumans. The theaters? That's. Which. Look.
I think that would have worked. I forgot what went wrong with that.
The budget.
It was the budget. Well, yeah. I keep telling myself one of these days I'm going to rewatch that again, but I'm always afraid to rewatch because I was upset with how they handled that. They really dropped the ball. But also, I am still glad that they are doubling down on their existence, because if you remember on Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah.
During the our favorite scene when a Illuminati comes, yeah. That black bolt is the same black bolt from the series.
Yeah, I know.
It's the same actor.
Now,
so
you know what
I like that
Inhuman series reminded me of. Now this is going to be a callback. I don't know how many people remember this. Remember when Fox tried to release Generation X?
I knew you were going to say that. I you know what? I'm going to agree with that, with the exception of it. This was a, even for their standards, this was better produced.
Yes, for sure. In humans or Generation X?
In humans, I felt was a little bit better in terms of production, but for Marvel Studios level, it fell off. The Medusa thing was the thing that everybody was most upset about.
Dude, somehow Spawn's cape in the 1995 movie looked better than Medusa's hair in 2014, 15?
How about that? How about that? But you know what's just funny? I do like that. I think She-Hulk kind of poked fun at the idea of their budget at times with this stuff, too.
Generation.
So it's hilarious.
I don't know why that movie, that made-for-TV movie, just stands in my head so much.
Because of what could have been, in my opinion. I think it what it could have been and what it did not become. And they had a lot of momentum, you know, at the time when they did this. And it just didn't cut. I don't think it was just the production that was it. I thought there was something else that was a problem with it as well. I don't know. They really screwed that one up. They really screwed the pooch with that one.
And they had a cool cast,
I love the cast.
But they had a good roster of mutants, right? Like what they had, Emma Frost.
Oh,
they had Banshee. Like, they had Jubilee. I don't remember who else was there.
I forgot they did it. We need to go back and watch that,
dude. That we need to find it and do a live watch along. I think
it won't be hard to find.
No, and do a live watch along of Generation X.
Yeah, okay, it's probably so hokey.
I don't know why I thought this was earlier, but this is 1996.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was earlier.
That was right.
I thought it was earlier for some reason.
Nah, but that was pretty much right. You know what's funny? You had that, and then you also had, remember The Gifted?
Yeah.
It's funny because I just looked at photos of my trip to San Diego Comic-Con, I think in 2017, was it? And I remember when I was there, they had this huge poster before the show ever aired. It was like it was supposed to be like a mock ad about mutants and whatever like that. But it said The Gifted coming in this fall, or whatever like that. And I remember that show was actually really good.
The person who played Polaris should have been Polaris all the time, even now.
Yes, that show was awesome back then. I wish it. Yeah. And that was right around the time Fox started like just teetering off.
Yeah, because right after The Gifted, Fox tried to do, what was that other show that they released on FX?
Oh, Legion.
Yeah, Legion.
And it had no connection to The Gifted. That was the dumb thing.
That was the worst part. That was the worst part about all of
it. It was like all of this was supposed to be related, but not related. And Fox didn't know what the hell they were doing. Here's my thing. I didn't understand why people did not just emulate what Marvel Studios have done in terms of storytelling. It's like they didn't do any. What Marvel Studios did was no nuance. They just did what they did in the comics and the comic books.
Well, right. But then, you know what show should have done? Did a lot better. Who released this? What studio was this? Was this a Marvel thing or was this a Fox thing? And I'm talking about Cloak and Dagger.
It was Marvel Studios.
That was Marvel Studios?
No, here's the thing. That was in direct connection to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
As was The Runaways, which was
I love fantastic. The Runaways comic. Like that Runaways comic
was just awesome. What the comic and the actual show. The show was, remember they had Dr. Doom.
Yeah. So because this show is when looking at this time frame. This is, remember when Feige was playing politics and trying to take over all MCU. So this is around that time when there was a separation between TV and movies and Feige was playing hardball and like trying to get everything.
Which, well, not only that, but there was a something, and this is what confused a lot of fans because I believe there was some point where it was said that like he didn't associate the TV version from the Agents even though he Shield. Obviously did
Agents of Shield,
Agents of Shield especially. You know what's funny? Remember I showed you that what's her name? Chloe? Jeff Ward and God help me. I can't believe I'm blacking out on her name. Sky, Daisy Johnson.
Yeah.
Quake.
Chloe Bennett.
Yeah, she was at Fan Expo.
Yeah.
They were both at Fan Expo, and I'm like, well, somebody just asked that question. Nobody ever asked that question. Like, do they think that, the story? Because I watched that show. It's like, even if Kevin Feige even said that it wasn't connected, he'd be lying out his ass. Because it's deeply embedded into the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I think
help
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the fact that Joss Whedon's name is attached to it.
Whatever the hell he did was nothing that...
No, but you know...
I mean, it was...
You know how Disney is. You know how Feige is, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think
it's very WWE-esque.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Dude, remember Captain America, Winter Soldier, and the connection that movie had with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1?
It was the only reason why Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. stayed alive. Mm-hmm. Because if you remember, the first half of the first season was very slow. Like, people were watching, people were getting into it, but the storytelling was very slow paced. It was not until that connection came in and people got excited in there, and it just skyrocketed from that point, because then it started connecting to Age of Ultron. It started connecting to Thor. It started connecting.
It connected to some of these movies was so well done. So innovative,
beautifully,
so smart.
Especially what was it? The episode that connected to Age of Ultron.
That when they say that, they have this whole mission that leads up to the first scene.
It was that Wednesday or Friday before we go to the movies, and it just got you even more excited.
It was Tuesday, and I watched the movie on Wednesday night.
Yes. And I was like, oh, shoot, I am so thrilled. And Chloe Bennett is the name I mentioned. But one of my favorite seasons favorite season of hers, the Ghost Rider season.
I was literally going to say, that was my favorite. I love the guy who plays Ghost Rider.
Robbie Reyes is remember they were supposed to do a standalone series with him. I still hate the fact that they did not do that to this day, because I thought he, all right. Forever and today until they think about doing it again. That dude is Robbie Reyes. Like, nobody else is, like, he embedded that character. It was just so well done. And also, people are still speculating whether Nicolas Cage version is connected. Because remember when they showed the original
Johnny Blaze.
I know, Johnny Blaze. I hate the fact that they are similar. But when they showed the original Johnny Blaze, it's like, okay, they do acknowledge Johnny Blaze, but is that the Nicolas Cage version of that? But I like the way he did that.
I love when they leave ambiguities for us fans' speculation. And they know what they're doing, because they know how comic book fans and pop culture fans are, right?
Right. And again, going back to the Cloak and Dagger situation, they definitely are connected, because there was a scene in Cloak and Dagger second season where Cloak was looking at an article. And it was about the Punisher and everything that he was doing on his series. So they connected that aspect on there too. And then the Runaways is connected to them. So everything, again, as we always used to say, it all connects.
Yeah. Mutant Next. That's another one. Remember the guy who played Lex Luthor and Lois Clark?
Yeah. Oh, the 90s.
Lois and Clark. That's a whole other show. That
Lois and Clark is awesome.
Carrie Hatcher.
You know what's so funny? I watch a different world reruns. I watch a different world reruns, man. And I remember the first time I seen Dean King was on the episode where he plays a racist too.
Yeah.
I guess he's fighting off Dwayne Wayne.
Where he's playing a racist. Sure. If anyone knows what Dean Cain is up to, him and Hercules, what's his name? Kevin Sorbo. Oh,
Kevin Sorbo is he's a bonehead.
So is Dean Cain.
But he played the right role.
So is Dean Cain.
Yeah.
Those two have,
they're a load.
Yep. Well, man, one day we got to have, we're basically doing it now, just like from 1990 to 2005, all of the comic book related things that came out that people didn't even know that were related to comic book stuff.
You know what's the thing, too? all these young kids, especially the ones that are probably listening now, if you ever say to even this multiverse saga of movies, if you ever say that these movies are crap, well, I'll show you crap. I'll show you Roger Corman. I'll sit you down, tie you up, and show you Roger Corman's Fantastic Four. Yep. You right. won't survive the first 5 minutes of that movie.
Yeah. And so many failed pilots, too, like the New Warriors.
Yes. You know, oh, God. Did the New Warriors ever come out with a pilot?
It did come out. It was never officially released, but they did film a pilot, and didn't go too far. And that would have been awesome, like Squirrel Girl.
I love the New Warriors. I used to read that book.
Same here.
You know what the reason why I read that book? It's because of Firestar. Because I'm like, you know, remember she was from, you know, originally from, she was before Harley Quinn became a character that was born from the actual, from the cartoon series. Firestar was like one of the originals. Like they created her strictly for Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, like a decade or so later, she's now embedded into the comic book universe as one of the new warriors.
It's so funny that you even say that, like, you know, how they, a lot of these secondary Spider-Man characters, I actually adore, like Cloak and Dagger, like Black Cat, like others. You know why? There's one specific reason why that got me interested in these characters. And then I realized that you can find a lot of these comic books for like 5 cents because they were such secondary, tertiary characters.
Mm-hmm.
Maximum Carnage video game.
Oh, that game was awesome. Wasn't it Green Day that did the music for that?
Green Jello.
It was Green Jello. Okay. I remember it was one of those grunge bands from back in the day. That was a classic. That. God, I wish they.
Oh, now I know wish. What. Now I know what our intro music's gonna be. What do I use—the real nice. Song or the video game version? That I'll see.
God, we gotta use the original video game version.
I know,
right? But like, I really wish Marvel would work with the Capcoms and the other people in the world to bring out some of these classic video games that we love. Like, I need Marvel versus Capcom games in my life. I need X-Men versus Street Fighter back in my life. Just make an anthology of Marvel, you know, Capcom games to come out, or even like, you know, find, well, who the hell owns LNJ anymore or whatever like that, or Acclaimed?
LJN?
LJN, yeah. Acclaimed? Who has the rights to those games?
Is like Acclaimed anymore? Still a company? Let me take a look at this.
They're long gone. Like, who has the rights, at this point, who has the rights to bring back Maximum Carnage? You know, at this point, you know, where's Sega at with the old X-Men game or the Spider-Man game? You know what I'm saying? Like those.
MCA. By the way, speaking of, now that we're talking about some video game stuff, did you see what Bethesda did? Closing down a bunch of those studios yesterday? Dude,
don't get me started with that. That is horrible.
But somehow 343 is still open and they have the biggest blunders. It's because they're in-house. You know what's funny? Like, they're in-house. I just, that's why.
I've reviewed Hi-Fi Rush a while back, almost a month ago. Remember, because that was an Xbox exclusive, and you know it didn't sell as well. Well, if you don't advertise and promote, what are you supposed to do? And it got a lot of, you know, internal review, great reviews. All of a sudden, you know, these are one of the games that Xbox, you know, when they waved the white flag, they decided to, you know, let, you know, PlayStation have some of those games, and I'm glad they did because I really enjoyed Hi-Fi Rush. I thought it had some great legs to stand on, and then all of a sudden, they're gone. Like, the team who made that is gone. I was just disappointed, and I feel bad. I wish all of those developers well. This is why a lot of those developers end up doing their own stuff at the same time. This is why they do indie, you know, they go to indie game development because one, they have their own creative control. Two, they can do what they want, you know?
Yeah. It's just a shame. So much talent gone. So much talent. What was like, again, what outside of IP, why buy these companies?
Yeah. This is a long ongoing situation in terms of artists in general. And yes, game developers are artists. But artists are like the unsung heroes of our lives in a lot of ways in terms of how we make a living, how we create happiness and excitement, and, you know, how it how the world works. We create your brands. We create a whole bunch of other things, and we don't get enough credit for it. And we're just like numbers to most people, you know. Even me as a freelancer, you know, I go through this all the time, and it's a shame. Some people do, you know, respect the amount of work that goes in there and the mindsets that go into it. Other people is just like, nah, I'm making the money and you're just a number. I'm making numbers and you're just a number, you know. And the gaming industry is no different. It's just utterly sad. And it's not the first one. This is like a list of a lot of people, which makes me wonder, like, what is going on in the gaming industry right now? Because I know they're making a whole hell of a lot of money in a lot of ways. And but I know there's other people who are not.
Yeah. All right. I'm trying to follow the money right now. So LJN was bought by MCA. MCA was then, they gave LJN to Acclaim. Now I'm seeing where all of this is. This was Chapter 7 bankruptcy. But it does anyone actually, can we buy this for $5?
Ooh.
Hold on.
Wouldn't that be crazy?
Asset selling. They blah 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 blah. Some firm bought the former Acclaim Studios and Studios Development Studios. They bought all the unfinished projects, Acclaim's IP. The new company was called Xclaim. Take Two.
Oh yeah, I know that. Okay.
After interested offers from Take-Two Interactive, it was announced that THQ had acquired the rights.
Oh, good God.
For something,
and we know particular. What happened here.
Yep, cream. Blah 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 blah. It's all been broken up. Literally every IP has been broken up.
Yeah,
Warner Brothers Interactive has some. Other companies have some. It's been all broken up.
So wait, could that mean Marvel has their own IPs of?
Quite possibly.
Okay, then let's stop playing around then. Like again. Can we know who actually has more ownership of the Capcom Versus series and all that?
Let's take a look at this.
By the way, while I look this up,
SNK is hiring a bunch of people for immediate development on projects.
Interesting. Discuss. I know they're working on a Fatal Fury game, which is coming out in 2025. So
they're also working on two other IPs. I forget which ones they are.
Original IPs or something that's already
original IPs.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Because you know it's going to be Metal Slug, so stop playing.
I know.
I just need them to make a better King of Fighters game. At this point, like really take that game seriously, because I feel like they just phoning it in with that one.
So Capcom, Virgin, and Virgin own 50-50 of this. Who owns
of the Marvel series?
The Marvel series, yeah.
So Marvel would have to go to them to negotiate doing something, and they probably won't do it because it's a waste of their time, believe it or not.
Exactly.
Ugh.
It's weird that Marvel has, but this is when Marvel was selling all the IP. Like
everything.
Crazy.
Yeah, I was, you know, it's funny. I was just explaining to people who don't know or don't remember, like, the fact that, like, why Iron Man was the choice of the character used for the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That's one of the few that they had rights to.
That's all, you know. It wasn't the first choice. He wasn't the first draft. He wasn't the first pick draft by any stretch. That's what I try to keep telling people. I'm like, he was not a first pick draft. It's what they had, and it was like it was the best case scenario that they were had, and it worked. It could have bombed, but they had the right director and they had the right actor to play it. But if it was up to them, they would have got Spider-Man in a heartbeat.
And even then, let's honestly take a look at this. Jon Favreau. Jon Favreau was coming off of a few disappointments after Swingers and stuff, right? So no one knew how Jon Favreau was going to actually be. And a comic book? Does this guy know what's up? Robert Downey Jr., this is literally his comeback, right?
Unbelievable.
If you look at the
everything going
against Iron Man, it's crazy.
It's
like X-Men. It's like X-Men, right? I'm going to omit Blade because if it wasn't for Blade, none of this would exist. But let's jump to X-Men 99. Low budget, unknown actors, outside of two actors, and even then, not that well known in the grand scheme of stuff. Patrick Stewart was probably the most known actor.
And Halle Berry. Both of those, yeah, well, those two alone.
People knew when it was filmed in '98.
No, remember, Halle Berry was hot off the tracks of Boomerang. She was hot off the tracks of, like, I mean, from a black cinema standpoint, she was definitely well known. So they got that demographic there. And she played in some other movies that, you know, she was starting to play in other movies that will, you know, get the attention of other people. So she was kind of well known in that case. But Patrick Stewart is Patrick Stewart nonetheless. And he was the guy that, like, when you talked about X-Men and Xavier, like, nobody could have played that role better. You know, up until like the first class deal. But yeah, like, dude, like nobody would have guessed. We were around at the time when we were like, when we were asking the question, who the hell is Hugh Jackman?
Who is this guy? Who is this clown?
And like, and then all of a sudden we finally saw what Hugh Jackman was in Wolverine. I'm like, oh, that dude, this is going to work. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that first X-Men movie was so freaking good. Still my favorite one.
It still holds to me. I think it still holds.
Filmed in Toronto.
Everything.
like everything. Speaking of video games, I love the way that these headlines and companies write headlines. So WB, Warner Brothers Discovery, had a huge hit on revenue as they announced their Q1 earnings. So did TKO. Okay. But if you read the line items, there's one particular line item that contributed to them losing money this quarter, and that was the huge settlement that UFC had to do, the antitrust settlement.
Right.
It just sucks long that WWE coming. Is now involved in all this, right? Anyways, Warner Brothers. And the reason I bring this up is because people need to care about Warner Brothers Discovery because of what we're going to talk about right after this, and that's AEW. Right now, we don't know what's going to happen with the NBA contract and Warner Brothers Discovery.
Right.
We don't know how Warner Brothers is feeling about a lot of things, right? Look at what they're doing with DC. Look at all the tax write-offs they're doing with major IPs, right? Like, there's a lot to this story. Anyways, I love the fact that a lot of media outlets, one in particular that I'm looking at right now with three letters with a G in the middle, an N in the end, and an I in the beginning. This is the headline. And I hate headlines like this because it's so stupid. Warner Brothers says the failure of Suicide Squad kills the Justice League contributed to a $200 million hit to revenue. So you're saying that's the only thing that you guys fucked up on?
Right. Right. Like, not Mortal Kombat.
Right.
Not Mortal Kombat for the Switch.
Not like, you know, they're what's literally funny? Put like, there is, it, there, like yeah. Speaking of scapegoats.
Yeah. They were quick to celebrate Phantom Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
After the fact that they finally got that game in gear.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just looking at their. So this is what they say about the NBA. They are hopeful to re-sign on the NBA. Let me do an control F A E W. Oh, no in there. All Elite. No, nowhere in here.
Mm.
Again, Donnie and I were talking about this on the main show, but I think a lot of people are starting to see how important AEW really is to WB Discovery.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to shit on them. I'm trying to put reality in the situation. I'm just trying to put reality in the situation.
Well, remember, again, we're going to go back to Fan Expo and how they claim that everything is all good and dandy and all that stuff when, you know, it wasn't all.
You know how you know things aren't going too great in AEW? I don't know if you noticed this on last night's show. How many times did Shivani say, business is booming?
When they start, you know how people always bullshit when they repeat things? Yeah, exactly. It's like, how are you doing, man? I'm all right. Everything cool. We good.
The other thing that always makes me laugh about when they say, business is booming, is if it's all Tony Khan and the hundreds of employees he has working for him.
I'm still doing a drinking game of like, where to, with the best Russell.
Fuck me. Again, I'm not trying to shit on them. I'm just trying to like put into reality that, you know, that WB Discovery might not be the best partner for AEW in the grand scheme of stuff, right, because they have so much to worry about right now.
Now, with that said, you know, put yourself in their shoes. I mean, will we do any different?
Oh, that, fuck no.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's easy when you're in, until you get into that look, position. It's like,
I can tell you from personal experience, SNME will be around for now on TSN radio, right? It's a year to year thing. So I understand.
Yeah.
But yeah, business is booming.
Stupid.
Business is booming, my friend. I think that's going to be the name of this episode.
Oh, good God. You know, with a question mark, business is booming?
Booming? Exactly. Anyway, again, I'm not trying to shit on the company. I have, you know, they're going to do well in the grand scheme of stuff, but
yeah.
You know, even this week when they were talking, talking about international pay-per-views,
yeah,
I don't know if people saw what Tony Khan actually said. He's like, we don't have the brand recognition that WWE has.
Yeah, and again, I say, to whose fault is that?
Well,
I mean, it does come down to how much you're willing to invest.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not willing to if you're not confident enough to want to invest in that much to get the comeback, then yeah, whose fault is that at that point?
Look, I kind of feel like AEW right now is going through this self-discovery phase where they're looking inwards and seeing what do they want to actually be? What type of a company do they actually want to be? And where in the totem pole of the entertainment industry do they want to be?
And if those who don't realize, like, WWE went through the same situations.
Exactly. Then. Again, 30 years ago, high school gyms.
Yep. Bars and much. I mean, like, and, you know, whereas NWA was kind of on a roll, yep. You know, it happens to the best. I mean, you look back at, like, God, you look back at like TNA and Ring of Honor to that extent in their history of how the hell are they still around in this case. It's Anthem. Crazy when you look at that.
Still around. Anthem.
Yeah, it truly is, man. It's just quite amazing. Real quick, let's switch over.
We're going to start seeing, like, you know, I'm very curious to see what Scott D'Amore's new project is going to be.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Interesting. Right. Working with Vince.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine?
AEW Dynamite live from Edmonton, Ontario, Canada. The Elite are running the show yet again. We are weeks away from Double or Nothing, and I forgot that we are only weeks away from Double or Nothing. And the reason why I say that is because I feel that we're still in this awkward, we're not setting up the pay-per-view because we're too far from the pay-per-view area.
Yeah, I'm not getting the vibe. And I know they're partially promoting and, you know, hyping things up for it. And they mentioning it, but I'm not there yet with the excitement.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Usually by now, I would feel a lot more excited, especially for a Double or Nothing. We'll talk about what's going on in Double or Nothing a little bit. So Adam Copeland is shown arriving at the arena in Edmonton. He says that he's not doing that great. He says he just got off the phone with Tony Khan and announced that tonight's TNT Championship match against Brody King is now a no disqualification match. Copeland says House of Black wanted the rated R superstar, and now they have him.
You know, solid episode. I was looking forward to it. I knew when those two come to Fist, and they were going to bang. And, man, I can't wait to talk about that one.
Orange Cassidy versus Trent Barretta started the show off. What you think of this match?
I personally like just the storyline of this match. I thought the match was pretty good. I'm more interested in the storyline than the match itself because I'm really into Trent right now. I thought he did a great job. And it's, well, I don't want to say great, but I thought it was solid.
It pushed the story forward.
Yes, Trent as a heel is something I felt like was much needed a long time ago, and I feel like it just looks like he's been waiting to get this opportunity. You know, Trent Barretta now to Trent Beretta way back in WWE is such a dramatic change. And people forgot that he was in there.
Like
his story is just quite amazing. Like he's one of those guys like you never thought that would still be relevant in this time, but he went to Japan and like really kind of did his thing over there. And then, I mean, I love his evolution. So I'm looking forward to this heel deal. And I thought he did a great job being the heel of this deal. And the crowd really reacted to it pretty good.
Yeah, it's like kind of like Juice Robinson, right?
Exactly. I mean, before Juice Robinson, to be honest.
Yeah, CJ Parker, like when he was in NXT and all of that. I sent you
Trent was the original of that type of journey in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I sent you that video with CJ Parker. Who else was in it? CJ Parker. There were some other people where it's like, wow, like this is crazy.
It's really amazing, like how far these guys
was
have come.
Was Bo Dallas in it? Yeah.
Crazy. It was
great. Khali showed up.
I still want to see CJ come back. I mean, or Juice come back with the locks, though. I used to love when he had the locks.
Same. Yeah, so this match was pretty good. Biggest part of this story is Don Callis and what is his relationship with Orange Cassidy. I'm liking how they're keeping that open. And again, one of the things is that this match seemed to go a little long. But whatever, that's fine. It was a good enough match. Cassidy, I like how they pushed the fact that he kind of cheated to win because he took as Trent Beretta was taking off one of the turnbuckle pads, the ref sees it, the ref is arguing with Beretta, but at the same time, Orange Cassidy removes the other turnbuckle pad, and then he pushes Beretta into it and does a roll-up for the win, so he cheats to win. This pisses off Beretta because Beretta attacks Cassidy. He hits him with a pile driver on the steel steps. Then he slingshots Cassidy into the steel beam underneath the ring. Beretta then grabs a toolbox. Cassidy grabs a steel chair, but Don Callis and Chris Statlander separate both of them. Callis and Cassidy leave together as Beretta and Statlander continue to argue.
Well, what I love about this is because this wasn't a match about competition. This was a grudge match. Orange Cassidy not caring about getting a clean win is kind of warranted based on everything that has happened to him at this point. So that makes sense in terms of storyline and psychology wise and everything. The story was solid. The story in the match was solid to me and I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. It moves things forward. That's all I ask for from TV.
And we still don't know where Statlander's, you know, hanging in on here. She's trying to be the neutral person. But with Don Callis now into this, I'm pretty sure she's a little bit perplexed.
Yeah.
And seeing where her allegiance is going to go to.
The Elite arrive at the building and they chose to park in Tony Khan's spot. We get a recap of the Elite attacking Kenny Omega. Then we see Jack Perry. Perry said Kenny Omega isn't as bad as he thinks he is. Perry said he hoped Omega could do all of his classic moves in his hometown because it would probably be the last time that he appears there. Perry said Omega was not the hero they needed him to be and called him a coward. And then Jack Perry said that everyone has to sacrifice and Omega just made his.
Perry is becoming my favorite heel right now. Remember the guy who we used to say, like, why are they pushing him? Why are they going forward with him? This dude's now a big deal in a major heel faction.
And he's talking a lot better.
And much better. I mean, his travels, everything that just happened to him was actually probably to his benefit. Like, he got edged.
Yeah. Kenny Omega's in the hospital. He apologizes for not being there live and blames the Elite. Omega says he appreciates that Matthew reminded him last week that the attack wasn't personal, but it was just business. He then says that as an EVP, he's got some business to handle. And then he announces anarchy in the arena for Double or Nothing, the Elite versus Team AEW, where Team AEW will consist of FTR and says the other two names will reveal themselves to the Elite very soon.
I am so happy that they did not have him come out to that ring and do that. I was worried, like, he better respond at a hospital bed or at home, you know, in bed, like in some form of fashion. Like, I'm so glad they did this. They thought it thoroughly. I liked the way they did this. I like that he's still, you know, pulling his weight there, and you know, this was well done.
Yeah, I agreed. I like this a lot. This next thing should have been pre-recorded. Serena Deeb comes out. Like,
agreed.
It just should have been pre-recorded. That's all I'm going to say, yeah. Right? Serena Deeb says she's excited to wrestle for the AEW Women's World Championship at Double or Nothing and that she loves Toni Storm, but she's aware of the narrative. The narrative being that she can't beat Storm. Deeb said losing is not an option. She talks about the seizures that she had last year, all three of them, and says she can't explain how scary it was. But she said through all of this, the only thing in her mind during the entire recovery was the AEW Women's World Championship. This brings
the reason why I, the reason why I co-sign with you on that mostly is because fans can be stupid, drunk, awkward people during segments like this. And all through the time when she's trying to, you know, talk about her story, you hear an obnoxious fan behind him say, you know, like, dude, shut the hell up at this point. Like, you don't have to get yourself out over every single time somebody like this is a read the room. This is one of those situations. I think, yeah, a backstage version of this would have been much better. And she probably would have been more comfortable, you know, fleshing out what she was trying to say and enunciate what she was trying to say. And she had to, I mean, granted, you have to be out in the crowd and you got to learn how to be a little bit more charismatic out there. But when you're trying to be have a moment like that, having a fan do that is just so disrespectful. And this is one of the things that makes me embarrassed to be a wrestling fan every once in a while.
The thing with me and all of this is that, you know, AEW needs to learn to hide and certain people's weaknesses.
Accentuate the positives, hide the negatives.
Exactly. Toni Storm comes out. Toni Storm, she thought she was going to hear from her challenger, but all she heard was a charity case. Deeb told Storm to give a shit and take her seriously. Storm says she doesn't give a shit about what Deeb went through. The two women go nose to nose, and as Deeb tries to leave, Storm stops her. But before Storm could do anything, Deeb punches and KOs Storm.
I think that was the best part of the whole entire segment.
100%.
The minute she came out. And what I loved about that segment, when she sold that knockout, that was a flair moment for me.
Yeah.
That was an immediate flair moment. That is, if any of you guys watch any NWA back in the day, Flair would do the same exact thing, and it was always awesome. Toni Storm really is, she's on the level now. She is absolutely on that level. She parade, even though she's doing this gimmick, she's still parading herself around like a actual champion in an actual wrestling. Like she checks all the boxes with this. And I thought that was, she did really well with that. Yep.
Orange Cassidy is backstage in the training room. Rocky Romero comes up and tells Cassidy that if he beats Jay White tonight, they can get a shot at the unified AEW Trios title with a partner of their choosing. Romero starts naming off names, and he even names off Beretta. Cassidy kind of looks at him, a little pissed off thing. Are you insane? But he does wish Romero good luck.
A really good segment, furthering the storyline, of course. I mean, I love that we got all these different, you know, people involved in it, and we don't know where the direction is going yet. So it's like very good transitional period with everybody. And we don't know which direction is going. I like the fact that, you know, Rocky is still trying to, be the diplomatic one in this whole thing and trying to just bring everybody together. We don't know where it's going, but this is an interesting thing. I do have a comment after you talk about that match too. And I got a question about that, but I won't do it until after that match.
Maria May versus Harley Cameron with Saraya in her corner. Look, this match was fine, but I think it just went a little too long for my liking.
Yeah, I agree with that too. You know, this is the first time we ever seen Harley in the ring, am I correct?
Outside of ROH and shit like that.
Yeah, okay. I thought she did pretty good, all things considered. Better than I would expect it, because I've never really seen her in the ring. Mariah is getting better, and she's getting to her groove. I like the elbows and forearms that she's throwing. Like, she's getting really a little bit more aggressive, I guess, to what she used to do in Stardom or whatnot. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah.
It could have been far worse.
May goes for a hip attack. Saraya pulls Cameron out. May goes to ringside and elbows Saraya down. Back in the ring, Cameron caught May in an inside cradle for a two count, but May came right back. She hits the Mayday for the win. After the match, Saraya attacked May, but Mina Shirakawa makes the save, and her and May celebrate, dance, and have some champagne.
I'm becoming very fond of that one. Both of them. And are they supposed to be a couple? Is this the thing that they are establishing? Or is this what they were doing in Stardom?
Pretty much. Club Venus, yeah.
Okay. I'm all for it. They're cute. They're both cute together. I just love her charisma. We talked about this before, but her charisma is just amazing.
She doesn't need to speak. Her body language says it all.
She has the power of El Generico.
Hack is backstage. He seems off and says after being asked about a return of the Death Triangle, he said he's not too concerned about that. Jay White and Bullet Club Gold walk up. Jay White says no one is concerned about Death Triangle because it's dead. White says that Pac lost to Okada, but he can beat Okada, and he could even bring the Continental Championship to Bullet Club Gold. Jay brings up that he has a match with Moro later, and that's what he should be focusing on. Question. They have three belts. Is one
Thank
of
you.
Them just
Thank you for saying that. I was going to bring this up. Go ahead. Okay.
I guess one of them is the unified title.
I'm assuming the black, leather strap with the gold.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, or those might be the original Trios Championship, and they have original. The acclaimed.
No, they are the original.
Yeah, and but they have the acclaimed ones just for show.
But the way Excalibur said it, it was like they got the acclaimed version. They got the ROH, and now they have the unify. I'm like, what the hell? What is going on here?
Nine titles. But,
okay,
as they but come it out, is which the Bullet is fine. Club. It's just...
It is, yeah, it is the Bullet Club. They're going to do what they do. So I'm cool with that. But I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was going to bring it up if you didn't.
It just looked.
I would also say this, since you already brought that up, I'm going to say this other thing. Pac in this scene was hilarious, because what I thought about the minute that he was just sitting there, like just lost. You ever watched a Family Guy episode where Quagmire finds out about internet porn?
Oh my god, yeah. Oh my god.
He just comes outside and Peter's out there. He's like, Quagmire, you okay? Yeah, I just found out about this internet porn. And then he puts his hand up and is like, this huge left hand or whatever like that. That's the way Pac looked like when he was talking, when he was doing a backstage interview. I'm like, what the hell did he just watch an interview?
Also, the other thing I realized was like, I don't mind the new backstage interviewer. She's
the new person.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, her name is.
But
yeah,
it just goes to show you how good Renee Paquette is.
Yeah, I think I think she's getting her groove. I think she's not. I've seen worse. She's pretty, she's okay right now. I think she has a means to be better. Visually, she's just unbelievable. I will say that, but yeah, technique wise, it's going to take her a little bit to get adjusted to that whole thing. Mm-hmm. But what I don't want to see is segments where they interview the people, but
the facial reactions,
they just walk away and just look. Oh, I just hate that, because WWE, that was a WWE trope forever. And now WWE is starting to say, like, back to you. I'm like, that's the way I thought. That's how I grew up with how, interviewers or, columnists, whatever, go. It's like, back to you, Jim. Yeah. Like, and they go. It's like, why is that so hard?
A House of Black vignette airs, and it was pretty much a tease for the eventual Adam Copeland Malachi Black match.
I would be more into this if they haven't done it so many damn times. I just, they've tried, they cultivated so many people already. And it's like, it's a rinse, wash, repeat type of storyline. I need them to do something different with Malachi in the house that doesn't involve them possessing somebody.
Right.
Because it's very glow, gorgeous ladies of wrestling to me at this point. And I know it's like once they get in the ring, it's fine, it's awesome. But the in-between stuff to me, it just, and this is just me personally, The in-between stuff to me is just, I'm not really into
creepy,
it.
Creepy, spooky stuff, you're just, yeah, I can see why you're not into it, right? You're much more into the real fight feel.
Well, not only that, because I feel like he could do it without, he can accomplish that without having to accomplish that.
Without having to
his
pop a
presence
Shango
alone.
Everyone?
Yeah, his presence, remember, when he was in NXT as Alistair, he didn't really lean into that Undertaker vibe. He was just that dude. And they did the entrance, but then once he got into the ring, it was just done. And just like, he got over hugely that way. Don't have to go the Undertaker route. Like, you're not, everybody's not going to be able to make an Undertaker. There's only one Mark Callis who pulled that off successfully. And then there's also a Mankind who almost closely vibed that, but nobody else. It's a rarity for to be able to pull that off.
Yeah. Which makes me really concerned.
And then you need the budget.
No. That's the whole other thing that people forget about this stuff. An Elite vignette aired. It was very pro-elite. We cut to the back where Matthew and Nicholas Jackson are praising the promo that they just saw, and they say it's time for the champ to come out because they were in gorilla position. Two AEW World Champion Swerve Strickland. He comes to the ring and he says he's pissed off and he wants to fight to replay the beatdown that he took at the hands of Cage. Swerve calls out Cage and the family. Cage comes out and he said that Edmonton is supposed to be the city of champions, but they won't be getting any championships this year when the Canucks beat the Oilers later. Funny enough, the Oilers were winning 3-0 and they ended up losing the game 5-4.
Oh, damn.
Suck it, Edmonton. Cage says that he's going to keep taking things away from Swerve Strickland until he gets what he wants at Double or Nothing. Cage then says Swerve has been riding a wave of momentum, but waves always crash. Christian says the only gold Swerve will have after Double or Nothing is the gold in his teeth, but he might have to take those right now. Swerve then says that he's not alone as the Mogul Embassy arrives from behind to stand with Swerve. Swerve runs down Cage. He even threw a Drake joke at him, which is funny.
I'm so tired.
But look, people are literally getting shot in Toronto at Drake's house. So this is like stupid as fuck at this point.
And well, it was just stupid because like once you, it's the hot topic to talk about. But after a while, after three people say it, it should be stopped because now you're going to hear from everywhere. And everybody wants to be on the bandwagon of the whole thing.
This isn't 30 years ago. This isn't East versus West. This isn't like, anyways. The Mogul Embassy then attacks Strickland from behind, and then Swerve got tossed from the ring onto the ringside. Mogul Embassy then powerbombs Strickland through the commentator's table as Cage laughs. Backstage, Cage walks to the Young Bucks, and they kind of acknowledge that they've all been working together as the setup was a great idea. I like this for the simple fact that we finally remove Swerve from the Mogul Embassy.
Yes. Also, note a few things. Nana. One, Nana was not there after his assault last week, which I'm glad that they let him take a break from that because he got severely injured, supposedly. At the hands of Nick Wayne, so I'm glad that they followed up with that. I knew the minute that they came out and they stood behind him, I'm of like, course. The jump off is about
of
to come.
Of course.
A black man is about to get screwed. So we had that. My only confusion, they had a timer at the beginning leading up to this point. And I'm thinking like, wait, are they actually fighting tonight? What's going on here? So they had a clock.
Because they were advertising a face-to-face between them.
Really?
That bothers me for so many reasons. You know why that bothers me? Because you don't, like, okay, this next match is scheduled for however long. It's like, how do you know each match is going to take and each segment is going to take?
Right.
Those timer things always make me laugh.
You know what it also tells me too is like, okay, you're telling people that, you know, you want people to chime in because it's at a time when there's a low ratings, you know, point. That's what I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. Like some of the things that Tony has done lately, it always, you could tell it's based on something else that is going wrong or going on in the situation. So it's like, it's not to say that it's transparent in a lot of ways, but I personally kind of know what's going on and why he's doing some of the things that he's doing and why he says some of the things that he says. And it's usually from a form of, you know, desperation or negativity that, you know, everything that he said or done lately to me, has been desperate.
Look, as he's negotiating with WB Discovery on that new TV deal, they could have easily said, well, over hour, you know, as yeah. when the new hour, at the top of the hour, your ratings, for whatever reason, go down, right? So, mm-hmm. which they do if you look at the graphs each and every single week. Anyways, yep. not that it matters. Willow Nightingale was backstage.
Oh. Yes. Yes, let's talk.
let's talk about the Willow Nightingales.
Yeah. How about that? Will.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at because so I, again, I
read. You're looking at the damn segment. Don't you lie.
That's what I mean. I'm not going to say. Because I look at my notes. My notes is my slam report, slamwrestling.net. They're big, two huge notes right here.
This was the most significant, you know, Willow Nightingale promo I've ever seen. And I
have no idea what she said, though. I'm joking.
To my credit. I did.
No, Willow. No, but this is actually a good promo. I like this. This did a good job of setting up the match.
She's so good. She's insanely good at doing these promos. Like, I don't think it gets talked about enough, but let's talk about it.
Willow Nightingale's backstage, and the TBS champion says she's still feeling beat up from last week, but you can't beat the smile off of her face. Nightingale says she's ready for Mercedes Moné, but wants to know if Mercedes is ready for her. Willow reminds us that she has a win over Moné and says she hopes she's ready for the fight of her life.
Well, shout out to Willow Nightingale for, you know, channeling her inner Jill Scott. First of all, appreciate that. two, how is that she hasn't been in the game as long, but she is a better talker than Mercedes Moné? How the hell does that not happen? I thought she did a great job. I feel like every time she talks, it's exactly what we want to see from Mercedes Moné. It's genuine. It is, you know, it comes off like naturally. It's her personality come to life. And it's not even like she just turns it up, turns the volume up. She is that volume. And now we're starting to see her take it seriously. She's not always the bubbly person all the time. She picks and chooses the time exactly. to become that person. But it is every part of it just comes, I believe, in everything she says.
Her character evolution. That's what I'm, you know, this is like, again.
Exactly. Right?
She hasn't become stale. She's changing. No. She's yes. not always, like you said, that bubbly self. She's her bubbly self to a certain extent, but she kind of is like a chameleon to the situation at this point.
Yeah, very well said. I like that. She adapts, she assimilates and adapts incredibly. Like, I don't understand. And again, well, we say that, but we talking about Sasha Banks, a.k.a. Mercedes Moné, who has been embedded in the WWE Performance Center and in WWE ideology for so long. She hasn't found herself. Her wrestling style is universal. Her promo, you know, techniques and everything, that's a whole other thing. Whereas, you know, Willow has been around the block. You know, she's been everywhere but WWE. So this is why the indie, this is another reason why so important, the indie scene is so important, because they get to do a little bit of what the territories used to do back in the day. And you get to explore these different, you know, areas and these different, you know, regions and all this stuff with different crowds and everything. Not to say that WWE doesn't do it either, but they have to, you know, do their own Muppet show, like, you know, structure. Whereas you got to find your own groove and all this stuff as an indie star. And that's what you're seeing when you compare and contrast the two right now. I think when you get in the ring is going to be a whole another thing. But like right now, you know, the hype, I think Willow's doing it.
Yep. Agreed. Jay White versus Rocky Romero. White was in full control throughout the match. Romero does a backslide for a two count. He then hits a sliced bread for another two count. But White comes back and he hits a nasty brainbuster and a blade runner for the win. That's it. After the match, Bullet Club Gold continues to attack Rocky Romero until Pac makes the save.
Which brings me to my question I was going to ask. Has Rocky Romero ever beat Jay White?
No.
That's what I thought. If you're a person who've watched New Japan Pro Wrestling over the years during the Jay White era of Bullet Club, and Rocky has faced him before. He's I'm pretty sure.
Pre Switchblade Jay White when he was white trunk, smiley face Jay White.
Yeah, but he was like a young lion at the time, right? So he probably wouldn't even
beat him.
Right. But when he came back, it was a whole different thing. And I'm like, when he did the promo with Orange, I was like, he's not going to even get
here. He was uber
this dude. Protected. He's never beaten him.
People have to remember how protected Jay White was when he returned as Switchblade.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, he came back a whole new dude, though. Like, I mean, which is with the Young Lions, you know, program. But I think, God, I don't understand why more promotions don't do the Young Lions thing. I think the Young Lions structure is, I loved it. I've always loved it.
I can see WWE trying to do something with select partners after NXT.
I feel like NXT is
while they're in NXT.
Yeah.
Anyways,
I feel like NXT is the Young Lions division right now.
It is.
Yeah.
A hype package airs for Samoa Joe.
Loved it. But it was like, I feel like, all right, you're trying to tell us how scary you are, but we always knew that. And like, it's like, wait, you don't remember your last run in here? It's like you're debuting all over again.
They could have easily done a good squash match. I know they did one last week, but there's no harm in doing another one.
Yeah. I mean, what is this leading to? Because he's already the champion. He was already the champion for a hot minute. It's like, why is he not back in the thing? And where is he ranked
right now? Why did you say that? Chris Jericho and Big Bill beat some jobbers.
Yeah. You know, I'm okay with a jobber match.
Yeah.
Just one jobber match at a time because it was just leading into something. It was okay.
Jericho says they were in Calgary. He got the heat.
Yeah.
Then he said he deserved the negative reaction and he's going to learn from his mistakes because he says that's what the learning tree does is learning from their mistakes. Jericho thanks the people. Thanks Big Bill for the great job he did. Jericho then gave kudos to Shibata and thanks Hook while claiming Hook hit himself in the face with a baseball bat. Tony Schiavone then tells Jericho that Hook will be back next week. And Jericho says that we'll all celebrate next week. You know what's funny? I know that this character is supposed to be a spoof of kind of like himself. But
you talking about Jericho, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because I got another person that I feel like he's channeling.
Who?
I feel like he's channeling Bo Dallas.
Right? Yeah, it's very weird. I just can't be arsed to watch Chris Jericho right now. I don't know why.
I think the only reason why I'm like channeled in is because I feel like this is always leading into something. And I think eventually he may not even be this version of the learning tree right now. I think it's going to lead into him just being the Chris Jericho that we know. But I'm just saying, because every time he does something different, it's like we kind of take it back. It's like why? It's like listening to Janet Jackson back in the day. It's like you listen to her album. And it's like, oh, all right, am I into this? And then the more you listen to it, the more you get into it, and the more you start rocking with it. Chris Jericho's like that for me. It's like, you don't know where this is going. You stick with it, and eventually, like, okay, I see where this is all leading to now. This is all makes sense. And then you start liking it and remembering it. But again, like, all I keep seeing when he does this is, because he smiles all the time, he's just being optimistic as hell, even though it feels like it's being condescending at the same time. It just feels like Bo Dallas. In a nutshell.
You believe. That was a great run. I love that NXT. When he was champ in NXT.
He was so hilarious in NXT. Again, God, talk about looking back. Oof, that era of NXT.
Cesaro versus Sami Zayn at the first takeover.
My God. Oh, God, that first match. Oh, that was unbelievable.
Emma versus Charlotte.
No.
The first takeover was Natalia versus Charlotte.
It was Natasha. Yeah. That was like Charlotte's first like real like we got to see what Charlotte it was all about in this case. Who was it? God, so many people, but Finn Balor's first appearance. Remember his first that entrance? Phew. And the music. And don't do it to me.
All right.
Let's keep it rolling. I missed that era.
Adam Copeland versus Brody King in a no DQ match for the TNT championship.
TNT, yeah.
My God.
Lived up.
I got that entire headline wrong. Yeah, this match was great.
You knew when he wore white, you knew something was going to pop off.
right? King does a cannonball for a two count. Pile driver slowed both down for a little bit. They both get up. Copeland sat King on his shoulders and did a Death Valley driver onto the apron. Then Copeland spears King through the ropes, going through a table that was set up outside. Copeland hits a second
spear. Alan McFoley in Edge.
Yeah. Copeland with a second spear in the ring to end things.
It was a really good brawl. I loved it. Brody King is just awesome. He is fantastic. And I love the fact this is one of those matches I love because you got a guy who's in a come up like Brody King getting a chance to wrestle a guy he's probably idolized, you know, for a long time. And I love seeing stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I love seeing opportunity get the guys get those opportunities like that, especially when Edge is, or Copeland is in his, I guess we could say prime or past his prime. I don't want to say past his prime, but he's in the he's in legendary stage prime. Of his life.
He's in his second
yes.
prime. Yes. I will
agree with that. Right, exactly. And he's still in a shape enough. He's Terry Funk. He's in Terry Funk stage right now. Jesus and Christ. he's in an area right now where he can actually, you know, still have these great matches. And so, you know, for a guy like Brody King, I'm sure he's just, you know, eating all that up.
Okay. Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck did I just do?
What are you doing? Ladies and gentlemen, he's plotting in something here.
I just want to take a look at something. So Terry Funk's retirement was in 1997.
Which one?
The one that we saw in Beyond the Mat.
Is that so, forever?
Yeah. So Terry Funk was born in 1944, so he was 53 when all of this happened. Adam Copeland is 50 years old.
Wow. And actually in way better shape too.
The shape that these wrestlers are in is just fucking unreal. Even yeah. Say what you want about someone like Jericho, right? Like
Jericho's Jericho, you know what I love about Jericho's this version of Jericho? He looks like the wrestler that I grew up with from back in the day. Like he's the Larry Zbyszko in a lot of ways. You know what I'm saying? Cause like now everybody see when Lex Luger came in and those guys like that,
Jericho's 53.
Yeah. See like, but his look right now to me is what I grew up with. Like remember when we grew up watching wrestling and you know, the Crockheads, the, yeah, exactly. You know, I just saw the dark side of that too. Finally caught up with that. But yeah, the Harley races, the Larry Zbyszkos, the Smasher and the Crusher or whatever like that. You know, it was a rare to see a lot of, you know, a Pac or a pack like we do now. Like Finn Balor, Lex Luger, when Lex Luger came into the scene, like Lex Luger came in like we've never seen anybody look like that before mm-hmm. in wrestling. Like he was new age, even though he couldn't do what these guys could do. It was like visually, aesthetically, it was like, whoa. Is this what it's going to look like now? And then we started seeing more people look like Lex Luger.
And then WWF
Luger happened. After a while. Right. And that exactly. was so, what
they wanted.
But at the same time, I grew up idolizing Dusty Rhodes, who could wrestle way better than those like big dudes, like Lex Luger. You know what I'm saying? He could last an hour in the ring with those dudes. So like, you know, and he came off a little bit more genuine in the ring.
All these motherfuckers.
Dude. Basketball and softball. Don't yes. mess with him.
Yep.
I remember watching him and Dr. Duff play softball. It was hilarious to see that. Like, don't mess with those. Again, remember that you come in, Dusty Rhodes used to come out to the Hank Williams song, Don't Judge a Book by His Cover.
Yep.
Okay.
Brody King attacks Copeland with a lariat, but Kyle O'Reilly comes out to make the save. Mercedes Moné is backstage. Have you ever? Okay, and I was trying to think of ways to bring this up.
The show should have ended there after right? that match.
But that was my first thought, and then my second thought was Mercedes Moné does not feel special whatsoever.
They wanted another second coming of CM Punk. I don't know what they were thinking. Look, I'm a fan. I am a above average fan of Sasha Banks, aka Mercedes Moné. But her being out of the system really kind of exploits her. And I don't understand why Tony Khan thought that he could get the same results from her that he got from Punk. I think that was a big mistake. And I think she was badly, she's badly utilized right now.
Because even Tony Khan was worked into seeing what WWE wanted us to see from Sasha Banks.
Which they understand how to accentuate the positives and hide the negatives.
Going back to what we were saying earlier, right? Like, yep. Mercedes Moné is backstage. She says we're only 18 days away from her in-ring debut. You shouldn't be gloating about that, right? Like, this is my thought. Anyways, Mercedes says she thrives in the ring and under pressure, but she's ready for Willow Nightingale at Double or Nothing. Moné says Nightingale took something away from her that she can never get back. Kind of how I felt about this promo. And that's my time.
Touche.
Adam Copeland and Kyle O'Reilly are backstage. Copeland thanks O'Reilly for his help. O'Reilly says that he's happy to help, but he asks for a favor, and he says that since Collision is in his hometown of Vancouver this Saturday, he wants a title shot. Copeland accepts. Real quick, before we go to the last segment of the day, of the night, of the evening, another 3 hours of AEW on Saturday. Look, I'm cool with Collision, but I don't like going through Raw because it's 3 hours.
That's my biggest peeve. Like, the whole... I miss what AEW used to be. And this makes me want to go back and binge the first 4 years of it, because I got a feeling I am going to see a huge contrast of quality from what it was back then into now. And I wish more people would go back and rewatch some of these episodes. Even the people from the company would rewatch some of the stuff. And I know you need to go forward. I know there's a thing that where you need to go forward, but at the same time, sometimes if it's not going wrong, if things are not going to the way that you want, go back and find out what made it right.
You know what made it right? Being the alternative to WWE. You know what's hurting them? Trying to be WWE light.
Which was the problem with a lot of other promotions.
TNA.
That's how many times have we had conversations about TNA? The problem with TNA is that they weren't being TNA. They were trying to be WWE light. And again, Tony Khan was a guy, and maybe still is, he came off like a guy who understood those blemishes of the past, and he would try to correct them. And for 4 years of that time, it felt like that he really was. It wasn't, he felt like he did.
You know what?
And then all of a sudden, something just changed.
You know what changed? He bought his own hype.
Hey, that could be a big proponent of that. I think there may be some other things too.
Yeah.
I think he got shook when the change of the guard came in for WWE as well.
Yeah, 100%.
If facing off against a senile 70-something-year-old guy is one thing. Going against a guy who looks like old version of Kratos is a whole nother thing. It will come at you just the same.
Okada jokingly tells Kenny Omega to get well. Matthew sends well wishes to Tony Khan and says that he's the best boss he's ever worked for. And then he says that Tony Khan, got in their way, and that's why they had to give him a TK driver. Matthew says Kenny Omega ended 15 years of friendship last week, and they had to give him an EVP trigger. Nikolic says, if Omega wants anarchy in the arena, it's on. The Bucks wish FTR luck in trying to find two other people willing to fight for Team AEW. FTR is out. They say they have two people who stepped up and are ready for the match. Eddie Kingston and Bryan Danielson come out. Everyone brawls to end the show. That is that.
I like the picks. I thought it was going to be the Blackpool Combat Club for a minute. Well, technically it is. But the fact that it's both, Bryan Danielson and Kingston, who are like supposed to be like, he earned their respect after a while. I thought that was a good change. However, I just didn't feel excited for some reason. I don't know if it was because it
felt random. And I'm more concerned about Bryan Danielson's health at this point.
at that point as well. Also, the fact that like this show ended way too long, because I felt like,
you know, you are not the like, I got like four messages saying, why is AEW still on?
I'm like, once that, because the main event match ended right on time.
Yeah.
And at that point, I'm used to AEW just saying goodnight, everybody. And unless they had another situation, unless they had a match that just went over, they could have ended it greatly.
Yep.
Or even, I just, when Mercedes came on at exactly 10 o'clock p.m., I was like, what the, wait, why is this still on? You know, I should be watching another show by now at this point.
Big Bang Theory or whatever, like, movie they show after.
Well, I know. I usually watch like something else.
Oh, I know.
But still, it's like, nonetheless, I'm like, why is this is just, no, just
that's,
no.
So that's the show. Overall, not bad. Does some good setup for stories overall. But like we said, there's just something missing and I can't put my finger on it. Dax.
Yeah. This was a transitional episode.
Dax, where can we listen to all your stuff? You got 3 minutes.
You can check out all things anime, comics, movies, and games with me on ACMG Presents Talk Time Live. It is the show that caters to all of your favorite fandoms. You can check it out every Friday and Sunday, select start. I will be reviewing Stellar Blade and the PlayStation Portal. Give you my thoughts on the experience of that, because I finally managed to get that. You can check that as well as my Sunday show, Talk Time Live, on TalkTimeLive.com and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Real quick, are you going to talk about all the controversy around Stellar Blade?
I guess I can. I mean, like, it was already, by the time I played it, it was already said and done.
Right.
So, I mean, like, it would be, me talking about that will be like me, like, wrestling and all pop culture talking about Drake and Kendrick when it's already over. So, I might just skip it.
Before it even began.
Right, exactly.
He's Dax. I'm Boris. Stay tuned here on Sunday night's main event, snmeradio.com, for all of your wrestling podcasts. And remember that this Sunday we will be back on TSN Radio. We're going to be chatting with Brian Hebner. We're going to be what else. Tons to talk about. He's Dax. I'm Boris. Till next time, stay tranquilo. Tranquilo. Tranquil. Stay cool.